May is Asian and Pacific Islander American Heritage Month. So to recognize our Asian and Pacific Islander American identified community, Cable will be airing all Asian and Pacific Islander programming from 8 a.m. until 4 p.m. on Friday, May 3rd. That day, we'll be airing features from your favorite API KBOO programmers. Tune in to hear episodes of Lip Fantastic, APA Compass, DMA Roberts' award-winning series, Crossing East, and an all-new Pacific Underground and music playlist by Sun Lee and DJ Diablo. That's Asian and Pacific Islander American Heritage Day, Friday, May 3rd, from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., only on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. For more information and program schedule, just go to our website at kboo.fm.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Yesterday was May Day, and May Day is a big free speech day for the labor movement around the world, as well as being Beltane. I decided to celebrate the Beltane edge of it and went off and hung out by an oak tree where a hare showed up as if summoned. It was lovely. I was there with friends and lovers and lover and friend. Yeah. Anyway, that was good for me. But today, I mean, yesterday in Portland, it was May Day. Also, for those who would look to move the labor movement forward, to stand up for working people. And that was difficult because, once again, the Portland Police Department, headed by Mayor Wheeler, allowed fascists to come in from out of state in order to punish, intimidate, and discourage free speech in our city. They coddled the Patriot Prayer types and the Proud Boys as they engaged in aggressions against people who actually live here. There's an article in the Oregonian and OregonLive.com by Jayati Ramakrishnan, who writes in part, Portland police responded to Northeast Portland Bar Wednesday after scores of apparent members of Antifa and far-right protesters clashed outside the business. Cider Riot near Northeast Cooch Street and 8th Avenue was hosting a post-May Day rally gathering with live music when the far-right groups arrived. According to patrons of the business, about 60 people were at Cider Riot when about 20 far-right protesters showed up. Several patrons said Joey Gibson, founder of the far-right group Patriot Prayer, was at the scene. Cider Riot owner Abram Goldman Armstrong is quoted saying Patriot Prayer and their affiliates showed up and started pepper-spraying people on our property. Now, speaking for myself, Cider Riot has been very helpful over the years for KBOO, helping us with our book show. So this hits pretty close to home. This is just two blocks from where I'm sitting right now. And the fascists came in and started up this sort of trouble. And as I was saying, the intent and the effect is to discourage people from expressing their free speech, to keep people from feeling comfortable about expressing themselves. It is an anti-democratic act. And I have seen this sort of thing over and over the years, as you have, and it's pretty clear to me that this is how the Portland Police and Mayor Wheeler have decided to discourage free speech in the city of Portland. This is how they fight against democracy. Quentin Robinson's quoted in the Oregonian article, lives across the street from Cider Riot, said that he saw both groups throwing things at each other and people being doused in bear spray. I was sleeping and I heard the noise and woke up, he said. I see bottles being shattered, people screaming obscenities. A news release from the Portland Police said some 60 people were involved in The Clash. Videos posted on Twitter by freelance reporter Mike Bivens show the fight starting after someone throws what appears to be a drink at the far-right protesters. One of them responds by deploying a chemical spray, leading to some of the group being doused in bear spray. And I want to comment that despite the back and forth of the action, it was the far-right who came uninvited and unwanted to the May Day celebration to cause trouble. And while that was going on, Twitter photographs indicate that the police were available and ready to break up the whole thing, but did not. Jyoti Ramakrishnan tweeted, "They did not respond when it happened, and they left us hung out to dry to be assaulted by those thugs who don't even live here. Members of a known hate group are allowed to assault people. I'm very upset with Ted Wheeler for not doing anything." Pardon me, that's a quote. That's not a tweet from Jyoti Ramakrishnan. That's part of his article. Quoting a tweet, "Yesterday, May Day, the Portland Police Bureau once again facilitated the agenda of Joey Gibson's fascist followers as they sought to disrupt the peaceful attempts of Portlanders to gather openly, express free speech, and petition their government for redress of grievances." Another tweet from Carolyn ORR. "Reminder, the Portland Police Bureau has a cozy relationship with Joey Gibson, the leader of the violent far-right group Patriot Prayer, seen in the video below. Lieutenant Jeff Nia was caught giving Gibson info about the location and activities of anti-fascist activists in Portland." And that's from, if you want to find that on Twitter, it's on under Carolyn, capital initials, ORR. Andy Ngo writes, "Fight on Twitter. Fight nearly broke out when someone with Antifa stole Joey Gibson's of Patriot Prayer hat. Masked individuals surrounded and confronted him as soon as he showed up. Hashtag Mayday." Occupy ICE PDX wrote, "Why are you disrupting peaceful rally of Portlanders and students, Joey Gibson?" Always Anti-Fascist tweeted, "Joey Gibson and his violent far-right followers attacked our Mayday show at Cider Riot tonight. PBB, staunch enablers of fascist violence. Watched the confrontation as Gibson's goons threw bottles, assaulted working-class people with pepper spray and batons. Long story short, Gibson and his violent followers were repelled by community self-defense. The attendees of the show treated one another's injuries, and Mayday show continues in high spirits." The video shows Portland police vehicles parked nearby to side a riot. And another tweet says, "Reminder, the Portland Police Bureau has a cozy relationship with Joey Gibson." Okay, I already read that one. Salty Cracker tweeted, "Southeast Burnside, 8:20 p.m. Mayday. Not sure if these six or so cars were the PPB pigs who were waiting in the wings to protect Patriot Prayer or whatever Joey Gibson's goons call themselves now, but they sure weren't protecting the people getting attacked at the Cider House." So that gives you an idea of what went down yesterday at Cider Riot. The Patriot Prayer types were also visible and present downtown as people tried to engage in peaceful free speech. And actually, the actions today were so peaceful, aside from the fascist attacks, that they were congratulated by the police chief for it. Now, what I intended to start off today with was an interview that I conducted Tuesday evening live from Caracas as the coup failed. And I think it would be interesting to hear this again now that a day has passed since that interview. 2 days, pardon me, is clear to me. Things that were not clear as the interview was conducted live, and that is that there was so little support, or really there was such a lack of support from the U.S. For their selected candidate, Juan Guaido, that it would appear that he was being set up, and I do speculate about that in this interview. This interview, well, I guess you'll hear, it is with the editor, Lucas, of the Venezuela Analysis website, but we'll just roll that and then I'll comment afterwards.
I'm Teresa Mitchell, joined today by Lucas Corner, part of the VenezuelaAnalysis.com editorial staff. Lucas is living in Caracas, Venezuela since 2015 when he joined the Venezuela Analysis team as staff writer and editor. Thank you so much for joining us from Caracas.
Great to be here.
Can you please describe the situation in Caracas now, starting with the events of this morning?
Sure. In the early hours of this Tuesday morning, rogue elements of the Bolivarian National Guard who were assigned to the opposition-controlled National Assembly legislature, together with led by Juan Guaido, the self-proclaimed interim president of the country, and also some rogue elements of the National Intelligence Service, that Sabin appeared to have staged a failed military uprising, you know, attempting to take over the Carlota Air Base located in the upper middle class east of the city, which has failed and, you know, ultimately led to clashes between opposition supporters and security forces, opposition supporters attempting to take down, to actually toppling the barricades, that security barricades that surround the air base. A number of injuries have been reported, though there are no confirmation, no deaths, and in terms of serious injuries, we still don't know at this time. The Leopoldo Lopez, who the Sabin, the intelligence service, freed from his condition of house arrest illegally, and he has fled to the Chilean embassy. He was convicted in 2015 for his role in leading the 2014 violent anti-government protests that resulted in around 43 people being killed over the space of 4 months. He also played a critical role in the 2002 U.S.-backed military coup in the country, in which we just saw the 17th anniversary of a few weeks ago on April 11th. And during that time, he together with Henrique Capriles, engaged in a high-profile kidnapping of the interior minister at that time. As of now, the whereabouts of Juan Guaido remain unknown. At this time, at 8 p.m. Eastern time, he's supposed to be addressing supporters via Periscope, though we don't know his whereabouts at this time.
Thank you, Lucas. Let me encourage you to generate as much volume on your end as you can. Our line is pretty thin, but we can understand you. So I've seen reports of perhaps 71 persons injured, and I have not found reports of deaths either. Does that sound approximately correct?
Again, there's a problem because those who are reporting are, for example, Provea, which is an opposition-aligned NGO, and likewise, I mean, the health ministry has not released any official statistics. So at this time, I could not give you a confirmation of the exact number.
So Leopoldo Lopez, as you mentioned, has been an essential part of U.S. efforts to overthrow the elected government there in Caracas in Venezuela. And he is now, I have heard, in the Chilean embassy. Is that correct?
Indeed, he took upon being released or freed by from his condition of house arrest by the Sabin, rogue elements of Sabin. He has, following the day's protests and what appeared to be a failed effort to march to the west of the city, perhaps to Miraflores presidential palace, where thousands of government supporters, Chavistas, were gathering. He fled to the Chilean embassy and is now there with Freddy Guevara, who is another member of his party, who has been there since around November, I believe, of 2017.
This is interesting. How many people under arms do you think were at the initiation of the coup at the La Carlota Air Base?
I could not give you a precise number, but according to Defense Minister Vladimir Padrino Lopez, he said that it was a very small number, and the photos of those National Guard personnel among the opposition supporters, it shows there were very few of them. The Defense Minister claims that, and this has been partially substantiated by video interviews with some of those who were arrested following participating in this failed uprising, that they were deceived by their sergeants and by their majors and told that this was a drill by the government, and therefore they did not know that they were participating in a pro-opposition, a pro-Guaido maneuver. And that's why they so immediately retired and disengaged from the area, and the confrontation descended into a more familiar clash between the more radical focals of opposition supporters and state security forces employing tear gas and rubber bullets, you know, the opposition supporters throwing rocks and Molotov cocktails, you know, in scenes that were familiar from 2017 and 2014, where, you know, particularly in 2017, the opposition likewise attacked the Carlota Air Base.
Guaido seemed to make it quite explicit that this was a military push, that this was it, so to speak. And it comes in the context of a previous brouhaha over trucks full of aid and after a bizarre assassination attempt using remotely piloted aircraft, after sabotage of the power system, and in the context of economic sabotage. Can you comment on people's feelings? What is the atmosphere in Caracas with all of this going on?
I mean, definitely the city is on edge. The air is, you know, extremely smoggy, filled, you know, with, as a result of burning barricades, you know, in the east of the city and the use of tear gas. Very hard to breathe, in fact. But the otherwise, I mean, the city is largely calm. Government supporters are vowing to maintain a vigil around the presidential palace in order to guard it against threats, you know, and a threat by the opposition to attempt to take it over, as happened in 2002. But otherwise, the situation has largely returned to normal, despite the grandstanding by Guaido that, you know, this was going to be the definitive end, as he called it, of the quote-unquote usurpation. And we saw this is becoming a trend on his part, because on February 23rd, you know, as you mentioned, with the attempt to force in humanitarian aid, quote-unquote, provided by USAID, by the U.S. government agency, that similarly that there was this was going to be the end of the Maduro government, and that clearly has not materialized. But it's also important to recognize that, you know, there's a real fear that this is an opposition that is willing to use, you know, extreme violence in many cases to achieve its ends. You know, Guaido has openly said that he has openly talked about authorizing the military intervention.
Okay. And, you know, you still there? Okay, we are going. Okay, there's more to that interview, actually, Ray. Anyway, for the moment, that was an example of the difficulty getting
this
through.
This corner of VenezuelaAnalysis.com. I'm Teresa Mitchell, and you're listening to the KBN, you know, vaguely speaking, the region. But as you were saying, their aircraft have not appeared in the skies. Now that the coup has failed, do you think...
Williams Avenue, and in Vancouver on Southeast Mill Plain Boulevard. More information on...
...city of several millions of people. There is a main air base that is a little bit to the south and east of that. That is not where the action took place. And apparently, at least...
Okay.
And, you know,
you still there? Okay, we are going to have to redial. Okay, so while we're working on that, and indeed we did have to redial and manage to get Lucas back in a couple of minutes on that. But in the meantime, I can... okay, we have that set up now.
Telephonic contact. Once again, you're listening to the KBOO Evening News. And we have exclusive live coverage of the events in Venezuela. And this morning, several armed soldiers, some, as Lucas was saying, apparently who were unaware of what was going on and weren't even on the side of Juan Guaido, appeared at the La Carlota air base, and that is an airstrip, military airstrip, that is in Caracas. Caracas is a city of several millions of people. There is a main air base that is a little bit to the south and east of that. That is not where the action took place, and apparently at least 25 armed supporters of Guaido and many cameramen, German television was there, CNN was there, stood with Guaido as he announced that this is it, and that the military end, and the final section of his various attempts to take power were going to move forward this morning. And right now, it would appear that the whole thing has blown, maybe not blown over, but, well, 25 armed supporters of Guaido, from what I have read, are in the Brazilian embassy at the moment. And I understand that we have Lucas Corner once again. Are you there, Lucas?
Yes, I'm right here.
Okay, thank you so much. Well, thank you for being patient with that. Now, it's interesting that we're not getting reports of people being killed, and I'm really glad to hear that.
How big were the coup crowds as they moved? I understand they were trying to go to the Miraflores presidential palace with Guaido at some point.
There was definitely not a large mobilization. I mean, today was not called to be a mobilization, but rather there was, you know, in the course of the events that unfolded this morning, Guaido called upon his supporters to rally. And, you know, certainly while there was definitely more people in the Plaza Altamira in the early hours, you know, these people cleared out as the confrontations with authorities took place and progressed, and only the most radical hardline sections remained street fighting with authorities. But it's important to recognize that Guaido, as even, you know, a opposition-aligned economist, Francisco Rodriguez, has been tracking in his weekly reports, has been really losing support in terms of these mobilizations. If, you know, Rodriguez claimed that on February 2nd, Guaido managed to mobilize some 800,000 people in Caracas, but this had really dwindled to around 20,000 in the most recent round of protests. I believe it was 2 weeks ago.
And to put that in context, how many people live in Caracas?
Caracas is around 5 million people.
5 million, a little bit more. A tiny fraction, but go ahead.
Absolutely. I mean, this is what we've seen is that as the days have turned into weeks and the weeks into months, and what was supposed to be a 24-hour operation to oust Maduro has, you know, lengthened into this, you know, long saga of continued broken promises of when this final regime change is going to be delivered. You know, enthusiasm among opposition sectors has dampened, and there really are doubts, you know, whether Guaido will be able to deliver, you know, just as, you know, or will he fail as the opposition has repeatedly failed, you know, since, you know, it really accelerated its efforts or escalated its efforts to oust Maduro right when he was elected in 2013, when Henrique Capriles refused to recognize the election result and the United States backed him and was the only country in the world to not recognize Maduro. So there definitely is a concern that the opposition is not, you know, anywhere closer to its objective 3 months later. And what does that mean for Washington, for President Trump, who appears to have staked much political capital, perhaps the 2020 election, even on the outcome of regime change in Venezuela?
You're listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. I'm speaking today with Lucas Korner, who is in Caracas right now and is giving us a live interview. He is with the VenezuelaAnalysis.com editorial staff. Now, I've been up since early this morning trying to follow this, and in hindsight, it looks peculiar. It almost looks like Guaido was being set up for failure, as if Pompeo, Bolton, and Elliot Abrams expected him to be killed today. And the reason I say that is because it would appear that he started off with this great confidence and with some armed troops, and he talked about a military rebellion, but he wasn't given for one thing, he got no air cover, apparently, unless you're aware of something that I'm not. Was there any air cover at all?
No, it's important to recognize that the Guaido has not secured the loyalty of any ranking Venezuelan military official who commands any troops in any branch of the military, you know, let alone the Air Force. They did not even manage to enter the Carlota Air Force base. So there was largely, he has made very little inroads that we, as far as we know, into the military.
There was a 767 aircraft, one that has been linked to the CIA because of its previous actions, because of its previous use of a false tail number. It had the right tail number on it today, N881YV, and it took off from Bogota and was listed as not available. It's in location. So I thought that might be something in the way of armed support for the Guaido faction, but it apparently just went on to Miami and didn't land in Venezuela at all. There's now Pompeo and the Trump administration seem to be trying to cover for their failure, making statements like Maduro was headed for Havana but was talked out of it by the Russians. But from what you're saying, it doesn't seem that the coup attempt ever got that far, ever got to the point of frightening Maduro.
Indeed. I mean, there are rumors that there was that Guaido had negotiated with elements of the military apparatus and the Supreme Court, and that the coup was to be executed on May 2nd. But these are totally unconfirmed and are at the level of gossip at this point, and, you know, largely reflect a blame game that is developing, that Guaido is being blamed for having acted hastily instead of waiting until May 2nd. But I think that your analysis is definitely interesting, and, you know, bears mention that there at this point, as, you know, this coup becomes increasingly less feasible in terms of actually, you know, affecting the day-to-day reality in Venezuela and taking over the seat of government, that, you know, Guaido and as Leopoldo López, who took refuge in the Chilean embassy, and there's also unconfirmed reports that Guaido might also be in the embassy, that they may be taking refuge not from the government but from the opposition, realizing that they are more useful to Washington dead than alive, and their, you know, mysterious demise or assassination would provide a convenient casus belli for U.S. military intervention. In fact, one could read the entire day's events as another effort, as was February 23rd, to provoke the Maduro government to, you know, do what any other government in the world would do, is to arrest these individuals and bring them to justice for their efforts to overthrow the elected government. And, you know, of course, crossing what the Trump administration has delineated as its red line, as in Syria, that, you know, it's willing to take military action to prevent Guaido from being arrested. So it remains to be seen what is going to come of that, but that is a possible scenario.
And I understand the USS George Washington nuclear aircraft carrier Strike Force Flotilla has approached Venezuela's waters in past incidents, and I have some word that there are two strike forces in, you know, vaguely speaking, the region. But as you were saying, their aircraft had not appeared in the skies.
Is not the coup has... The interview that you just heard, that was from Tuesday, as the attempted coup was still going on, as it was fizzling. And the information that I have now is that, indeed, the coup very much fizzled. The opposition has, again, tried to get out into the streets. There is an article on Counterpunch by Peter Lukowski from yesterday saying the streets of Caracas were very normal except for a big concentration of loyalists, Chavistas, around the Miraflores presidential palace. And skipping ahead, one of our delegation went to the Altamira area. That's where the pro-Guaido, pro-U.S. people are, the rich part of town, and saw about 200 demonstrators, far from the thousands reported by some media. Skipping ahead, Guaido's assault on the La Carlota military airport was farcical. I don't have all the details, but one thing has emerged. Most of the soldiers involved have been told they were going there to receive an award and were surprised when they were arrested. They were tricked into being there. No doubt details will come out eventually. And he's saying that there's food in the restaurants and that it is calm. He writes, it appears that the opposition is losing its momentum given the incompetence of Guaido and his handlers, while thousands of Chavistas were ready to show up to defend Miraflores. We shall see what they can do tomorrow, meaning today. He writes, someone came by our hotel who went along with some of Guaido's supporters to a classy restaurant after watching the coup attempt fail. Many were angry that he, meaning Guaido, had falsely implied that he had taken control of the airport. When he called for them to join him there, they felt he was manipulating them with a lie. Their evolving attitudes are turning up in their social media posts. And he writes, also it was a lie when he tweeted that the army was with him. It has been coming out that many in the army resent the fact that he has been calling on the U.S. to send in its army, since they would be the ones who would die. So I'm getting towards the bottom of the hour, but Per Fagering is coming up, and he has more on the Mueller report and also on the Venezuela situation, so you'll want to be staying tuned for that. But again, to wrap up, the coup attempt that started Tuesday has utterly and completely failed, and as the Maduro government, the elected government in Venezuela, is too smart to go along with the U.S. by arresting or shooting Guaido, he is still out in the streets with a few supporters. These are the wealthier, whiter people who support rule by the United States in Venezuela, even at the expense of their own sovereignty. In short, they are traitors to their own country, and it's kind of sad to see. They were suckered pretty hard Tuesday, so I imagine that they're feeling pretty flat, but that's the long and short of it. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM from our big red and white Eiffel Tower on the West Hills. Other frequencies in Cascadia and via KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea. ¶¶
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Zenith Tar Sands Oil Expansion Community Forum on Thursday, May 2nd at 6:30 p.m. at the Augustana Lutheran Church in Portland. This is the fourth community forum about Zenith Energy's ongoing expansion of the Portland Tar Sands Oil Facility. The panel will discuss how this facility's operations can harm people, urban wildlife, rivers, and air quality, as well as background on the terminal site, climate justice impacts, ideas for public action, and more. Again, that's the Zenith Tar Sands Oil Expansion Community Forum on Thursday, May 2nd from 6:30 to 9 p.m. at the Augustana Lutheran Church, 2710 Northeast 14th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Coming up next on KBOO, it's Fight the Empire. Pair dives further into the Mueller Report and looks at the current crisis in Venezuela. At 10, it's the Heather McCoy Show. Heather welcomes the Washington editor of The Intercept, Ryan Grimm, to talk about the recent political profile of The Intercept and his forthcoming book on Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Ken Jones talks with Meg Vogt, author of the new book of photographs and poems, MYKU, My Portland. And at 11:30, Black Book talks to Portland-born author Mitchell S. Jackson about his book Survival Math. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or go to our mobile app and click on Donate.